A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one, and it's personal, which I appreciate. He grew up tinkering with electronics. His late dad was an engineer who gave him the mandatory AC warning speech, and now he's got a 1-year-old son, Ezra, watching him with enormous curiosity while he's working on an ESP32 project. His question is essentially, how do you pass that spark to a kid without passing along the same electrical risks? He's thinking about what he calls a safe space, low voltage DC only, breadboards instead of soldering, controlled exploration. And he's asking parents who've done this, what are the best practices to make sure it's actually safe, especially when small parts and small children are in the same room?
This one hits close. I spent years in pediatric practice in Jerusalem, and I saw what happens when curiosity outruns caution, not just with electricity, but with anything small enough to swallow. Daniel's framing is smart, though. He's not asking, should I let my kid near electronics? He's asking, how do I build the right container for it? That's the pediatrician's instinct, honestly. You don't ban exploration, you structure it.
And the timing matters. ESP32 boards cost about $5 now. Arduino ecosystems are in every robotics club in Israel. First Lego League, SciTech. The programs are Matatech in Haifa. These clubs have safety protocols baked in. Supervised soldering stations, mandatory glasses, trained instructors. But the home environment is the Wild West. No liability insurance, no second pair of eyes, and a toddler who treats every small object like a potential snack.
That's the actual tension, isn't it? Daniel's dad gave him the AC warning speech, which every engineer parent delivers at some point, usually with the gravity of a hostage negotiator, and now Daniel's trying to write the next chapter. Not don't touch this, but here's how you touch this safely. That's a generational shift in how we think about teaching technical skills.
The don't touch speech versus the here's how to touch speech. One closes doors, the other opens them with a hand on the doorknob.
Let's pin down what that safe space actually looks like. Daniel's talking about low voltage DC. We're in the realm of 3.3 volts or 5 volts, the kind of thing that comes out of a USB port or a couple of AA batteries. At those levels, lethal shock is off the table. The physics just doesn't support it.
Which is not the same as saying it's harmless. I've watched enough people touch a 9-volt battery to their tongue to know DC has teeth. It's just not life-threatening teeth.
The tongue test is actually the perfect teachable moment. Your tongue is wet, conductive, and sensitive. You feel that tingle at 9 volts because the current's flowing through a low resistance path. But the current involved is maybe a few milliamps. Compare that to mains AC at 240 volts, where the current can disrupt your heart's rhythm at 10 to 20 milliamps. Different universe of risk.
The safe space isn't no sensation. It's no lethality. Burns from a shorted component, a pinched finger from an alligator clip, maybe a surprising zap if you bridge the wrong pins with damp hands. Annoying, not ambulance-worthy.
The tools have changed the landscape enormously since the era Daniel's dad was teaching him. Breadboards mean no soldering. You push wires into spring-loaded contacts. Alligator clips and jumper wires make every connection reversible in seconds. An ESP32 board has a voltage regulator built in, so even if you feed it 5 volts over USB, it steps everything down to 3.3 for the logic pins. Most boards also have reverse polarity protection on the USB input. Plug something in backwards, the board just doesn't power up instead of releasing the magic smoke.
Magic smoke being the technical term for you. Just destroyed your $15 board.
It's in the IEEE standards, I'm fairly certain.
Here's what I think Daniel's really circling. When an adult says this is safe, they mean, I understand the risks, and I've mitigated them. When a 1-year-old like Ezra is in the room, safe means, even if I turn my back for 10 seconds, nothing catastrophic happens. That's a higher bar.
Which is why the safe space concept has to include the physical environment, not just the voltage level. But we'll get to that. The electrical foundation is solid. Low voltage DC is genuinely the pedagogical sweet spot. Kids can experiment with current limiting resistors. They can short something by accident and learn from the mistake without anyone getting hurt. Trial and error is how you internalize Ohm's law, and you can't do trial and error at mains voltage. Let's get concrete about why low voltage DC is safe but not harmless. The key number is the let-go threshold. For AC, it's around 10 to 20 milliamps. That's the point where your muscles involuntarily clamp onto the conductor and you can't release. For DC, that threshold is higher, more like 20 to 30 milliamps, because DC doesn't cause the same kind of continuous muscle tetany. Below that, you feel it, but you're in control.
AC grabs you. DC just lets you know it's there. That's the difference between a hostage situation and a rude handshake.
That's actually not a bad way to put it. And at 3.3 or 5 volts, even if you bridge the contacts with damp skin, the current stays well below that danger zone because your body's resistance. Typically a few 100,000 ohms across dry skin, dropping to maybe 1,000 ohms if you're sweaty, limits the flow.
Which brings us to the ESP32 specifically. Daniel's working on one, and I think a lot of parents are going to encounter these boards. What makes them kid-friendly from an electrical standpoint?
First, the voltage. It runs on 3.3 volt logic powered by USB at 5 volts with an onboard regulator handling the conversion. Second, the GPIO pins, general purpose input. Output can source or sync up to 40 milliamps each. That's enough to light an LED, drive a small buzzer, or spin a tiny motor, but it's current limited by design. You can short a pin to ground by accident and the board might reboot, but it won't deliver a dangerous jolt. Third, most ESP32 DEB boards have reverse polarity protection on the USB input. Plug the cable in wrong, nothing happens. No sparks, no smoke.
Magic smoke retained.
Compare that to the 1980s, when a hobbyist kid might be poking around inside a CRT television with 400 volts lurking on the flyback transformer. The barrier to catastrophe was one wrong move. Today, the barrier is engineered into the board.
Which is why the real hazards have shifted. Daniel mentioned small parts, and he's right to worry. A standard through-hole resistor is about the size of a peanut. An LED is smaller. Jumper wires are colorful and look exactly like something a one-year-old would want to chew on.
Breadboards, for all their convenience, create their own category of risk. The spring-loaded contacts grip wires firmly, but if a child yanks a jumper wire out, the exposed metal pin is a pokey hazard. Loose wires left in the board can create accidental shorts if they bridge power rails. A short across 5 volts and ground isn't going to hurt a person, but it can heat up a wire enough to cause a small burn if you touch it.
The parent's mental checklist shifts from, will this kill my child, to will this end up in his mouth, will this poke his eye, and will this get hot enough to leave a mark? It's a different kind of vigilance.
That brings us to the warning speech. Daniel's dad gave him the AC talk. I think the modern version needs to be broader, less about a specific voltage, more about a mindset. Rule 1. Always assume a wire is live until proven otherwise. Rule 2. Never work on a circuit while it's powered. Rule 3. Always use a multimeter to verify voltage before touching anything.
Those rules scale. A kid who learns at age 6 to check with a multimeter before touching a breadboard is going to do the same thing at 16 before reaching into a breaker panel. It's not about fear. It's about ritual.
The multimeter itself is a fantastic teaching tool. You can show a child, see, the meter says 0.0 volts, that means it's safe to touch. It turns an abstract concept into something visible. For a 5-year-old, that's almost magic. For an 8-year-old, it's the beginning of understanding measurement and verification.
The Blinking LED Project is the perfect entry point for exactly this reason. ESP32, 2 20-ohm resistor, 1 LED, a USB power bank. The resistor limits current to about 15 milliamps, safe for the LED, safe for curious fingers, and you can explain the whole thing in about 90 seconds. The resistor is like a narrow pipe. It only lets a little bit of electricity through.
If they short the LED by accident? It doesn't light up. That's the failure mode. Not a trip to the emergency room, just a moment of, huh, why didn't it work? Followed by a teachable conversation about current taking the path of least resistance. That's what trial and error looks like in a safe space. The errors are informative, not injurious. The electrical risks are manageable. But the real challenge for a parent of a one-year-old is the mechanical and behavioral side. And Daniel specifically mentioned those Israeli clubs, First Lego League, SciTech, Matatech, up in Haifa. I've seen their setups. Dedicated workbenches, fume extractors at every soldering station, safety glasses mandatory, and a trained instructor whose entire job is to scan the room for hazards.
Which is infrastructure a home simply doesn't have. No liability insurance, no second pair of trained eyes, and a toddler whose primary research methodology is putting things in his mouth. The clubs are fantastic, but they're designed for school-age kids in a controlled environment. Daniel's dealing with a one-year-old who sees an ESP32 board and thinks, colorful rectangle, probably delicious.
An ESP32 dev board is about 2 inches long. That's squarely in choking hazard territory. So the first principle for Ezra's age is physical separation. The parent does all the hands-on work while the child observes from a safe distance. A high chair, a playpen, even just the other side of a baby gate. What I'd call a clean zone, no components within arm's reach of the child, period.
This is where the home workshop setup actually matters more than the voltage. A silicone mat with raised edges, the kind you'd use for soldering. Catches dropped resistors and LEDs before they roll under the couch where a toddler can find them 3 days later. A parts organizer with labeled compartments and childproof lids keeps everything contained. And a magnetic parts bowl is surprisingly effective for preventing spills when you're swapping components.
The magnetic bowl is one of those things that sounds like a gimmick until you knock over a tray of 200 assorted resistors and spend the next hour on your hands and knees with a flashlight. For a parent with a crawling child in the house, that's not just annoying. It's a safety incident waiting to happen.
Daniel's question points to something longer term, too. Ezra's one now, but what does the progression actually look like? At what age can a kid go from watching to doing?
There's a rough developmental ladder. At one, it's pure observation. The child watches from a safe perch while the parent narrates what they're doing. At around 5, they can start placing components on a breadboard with tweezers, which is great for fine motor skills and teaches them to handle small parts deliberately. By 8, they're writing simple Arduino code, the drag-and-drop stuff, then graduating to actual C++. And by 12, with supervision, they can learn to solder.
Soldering at 12 feels right. Before that, the combination of a 400-degree iron, lead exposure, and fumes is just not worth it when breadboards teach the same concepts.
And the soldering stations at those Israeli clubs have fume extractors and temperature-controlled irons. At home, you're probably at the kitchen table with a window open. Different risk calculus.
The small parts management is where I think most parents underestimate the challenge. Daniel mentioned trying to keep Ezra from grabbing components. That's a constant, active effort. I'd add a specific habit, one component out at a time. You take a resistor from the organizer, you place it, then you take the next one, and you count components before and after every session. If you started with 5 LEDs and you can only find 4, you don't leave that room until you find the 5th.
That's the pediatrician's instinct again. Button batteries are a well-known emergency room nightmare because kids swallow them and they cause internal burns. An LED isn't a button battery, but it's small enough to be a choking hazard, and the count-in, count-out method is the cheapest insurance policy you can buy.
One more thing on storage. Some ESP32 projects use lithium-ion batteries, 18650 cells, for portable or battery-powered builds. Those need to live in fireproof bags. They're not inherently dangerous under normal use, but if one gets punctured or shorted, the thermal runaway is no joke. And a curious kid with a screwdriver is exactly the kind of variable you don't want near an unprotected lithium cell.
Which loops back to the core difference between the club environment and the home. The clubs have locked storage cabinets and fire extinguishers mounted on the wall. At home, you're replicating the safety culture without the infrastructure. That means being obsessive about the small stuff. Lids on containers, batteries in bags, components counted, and a hard rule that the workspace gets inspected and cleared before the child enters the room.
The silicone mat with raised edges is the unsung hero here. I've seen a home workshop where the parent uses one of those oversized soldering mats, maybe 2 feet by 3 feet, with little built-in compartments for screws and a lip around the edge. Anything that gets dropped stays on the mat. Nothing rolls onto the floor. For a household with a toddler, that's not organizational, it's defensive.
Let's boil this down to three things a parent can actually do this weekend. First, the safe space checklist. Low voltage DC only, 3.3 or 5 volts powered by USB or batteries. Breadboard-based projects, no soldering until age 10 plus, and a physical barrier between the child and the workspace. Playpen, closed door, baby gate. Whatever works for your floor plan.
The barrier is the part people skip because it feels excessive until it isn't. A 1-year-old can cross a room in the time it takes you to check a multimeter reading.
Second, the three rules. Teach them early, even before they understand the physics. Always assume a wire is live. Never work on a powered circuit. Always verify with a multimeter before touching. These aren't rules about electricity. They're rules about how you approach anything that could hurt you.
They're teachable without a lecture. You just model them every time. Watch, I'm checking with the meter. 0 volts. Okay, now I can touch it. Kids absorb ritual faster than explanation.
Third, the component count. Before a session starts, count every resistor, LED, and jumper wire. After the session, count them again. If the numbers don't match, nobody leaves until they do. It sounds obsessive, but it takes 60 seconds and it prevents a small part from ending up in a small mouth 3 hours later.
For the actual starting point, the thing you do with a kid who's watching, grab an ESP32, a USB power bank, a 220 ohm resistor, and an LED. The power bank is your safety net. It's 5 volts, current limited, and completely isolated from mains. Let the child press the reset button. Let them plug in the USB cable. That's it. That's the first lesson. You made it light up.
The reset button is genius for little kids. It's a big, satisfying click with an immediate visible result. The LED blinks. They did that. You've just taught cause and effect with a microcontroller, and the worst thing that can happen is the LED doesn't blink and you try again.
Which is exactly the kind of failure pattern you want at age 1, or 5, or 40. No sparks, no burns, no panic. Just, let's figure out what went wrong. That's the safe space Daniel's talking about. Not just safe from injury, but safe to fail.
That brings us back to Daniel's dad. He gave the AC warning speech, the one every engineer parent delivers, probably standing in front of a breaker panel with the gravity of someone reading a will. That speech was about fear. This thing can kill you. Stay away. And it worked. Daniel's still here.
Daniel's writing a different speech for Ezra. Not this will kill you, but this is how you explore without getting hurt. That's not just a parenting choice. It's a whole different philosophy about what knowledge is for.
The AC speech says the world is dangerous. Here's the boundary. The DC speech says, here's a smaller world where you can push every button and pull every lever, and the worst thing that happens is you learn something. One closes the workshop door, the other opens it with you standing right there.
The stuff coming down the pipeline makes this even more urgent. The ESP32-S3 has a built-in AI accelerator now. Neural network processing on a $5 board. We're maybe 2 years from kids designing IoT devices in elementary school. Voice-controlled nightlights, soil moisture sensors for the garden, little robots that follow a line of tape on the floor. The barrier to entry isn't cost or complexity anymore, it's just safety.
Which means the parents who figure out the safe space now, the mat, the component count, the three rules, the clean zone, they're not just protecting their kids. They're giving them a head start on a skill set that's going to be as fundamental as reading. And the kids who don't get that early exposure because their parents were too nervous to let them near a breadboard, that gap compounds.
The question Daniel's really asking, whether he meant to or not, is what kind of inheritance are we handing down? His dad gave him the warning, and that warning kept him alive. Now he's giving Ezra something else, permission. Permission to poke, to short things out, to get it wrong 20 times before the LED blinks. That's a gift.
If you're listening to this and you've got a story about introducing your kid to electronics, or you're the kid who got introduced and you remember the first thing you built, send it to us, show@myweirdprompts.com. We'd love to hear what worked, what didn't, and what you wish someone had told you before you found that resistor under the couch cushion 3 weeks later.
This has been My Weird Prompts. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. It helps other people find the show. We're back next week.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, my weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.